This is episode 82 of the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops with Daryl McAllister. In this episode, we talk about the value of industry certifications, changes in technology and business model, and opportunities with new cloud apps. You can support this podcast by purchasing guides from www.ciaops.com/publications. There you will find a range of information on using technologies like SharePoint and Office 365. You'll also find templates there to use on your own SharePoint site to help your business get up to speed quickly. Reseller options are also available. All of this can be downloaded immediately at www.ciaops.com/publications. So welcome back to another editorial before the main podcast here. So a couple of items to cover off. The first thing is that Skype for Business Client is now rolling out. You probably have seen this update on your desktop. So that means that the Link client 2013 has now become Skype for Business. So functionality pretty much the same, but look and feel very differently. Now there is some PowerShell commands you can use to roll back to the old interface, and I'll put the blog post for that up in the show notes. Another thing to point out is the Office Online and Dropbox web integration. So now you can open and save documents directly from Office Online to Dropbox. This functionality will be rolling out also for the Office 365 commercial product very shortly. Some other interesting apps that have now made their way out onto the devices is the Delve app for iOS and Android. So Delve is very much like a Flipboard in that it surfaces information that is sourced from interactions you have with your team, and now you can access that and work with that directly on iOS and Android via a dedicated app. And speaking of apps, we've also seen the release of the Office 365 video app. This allows you to access the Office 365 video component directly on a mobile device. Now, one of the biggest updates, one of the most positive things I think that has just come out is that the SharePoint team site default size is now being increased from the 10 gig starting point up to 1 terabyte. So again, this is currently rolling out. It's not currently available as yet, but the fact that it has now appeared on the roadmap as rolling out is an indication that it shouldn't be too far away. So this means that when you start using SharePoint TeamSite as opposed to OneDrive for Business, you will get 1 terabyte of storage to start with in that TeamSite rather than what currently is available on, which is the current 10 gigabyte. So that will be available for all SharePoint site collections, and that is a huge positive, I think, because it certainly facilitates much more collaboration rather than having people dump things straight into OneDrive because it had more storage capacity. Moving the team site to this sort of space is again going to encourage people to put more stuff into the fuller collaboration experience of a team site. Just something that I've recently blogged about on the security side that I reckon is worth having a look at. I've got a blog post up there called The Dark Web, which also points to a great documentary on YouTube about some of the security concerns around the Internet of Things and the technology direction that we're taking. So if you get a chance, certainly worthwhile having a look at that. The other non-technology thing I will bring to your attention if you are an Australian is that we're coming up on Anzac Day shortly, and I do have a battlefield site called Anzacs in France, so www.anzacsinfrance.com. This basically chronicles the contribution that Australian troops made in World War I after the Gallipoli landing. So again, if you're interested, take a look, let me know what you think, and again, lest we forget. So a few tidy up standard things here. My SharePoint free SharePoint email courses are available at bit.ly/gs-spo. Again, I'm still looking for guests or for people to come on the show. So if you would like to do that, please contact me directly. You can also now connect with me on my Skype for Business. And my Skype for Business account is admin@ciaops365.com. Don't forget to give us some iTunes reviews. Let us know what you think. Always looking to improve and help what people want with their feedback. So don't be shy, send it through and let me know. So for any questions and comments, please direct those to www.ciaops.com/contact. And with that, let's get into the podcast. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. My name is Robert Crane, and I'm joined in this episode by Daryl McAllister. Welcome, Daryl.
Welcome.
Excellent. All right. Well, as we always do with our podcast, we'll get our guest to introduce himself and give us a bit of a light on who he is, what he does, and a bit of background. So if you could do that for us, Daryl, that'd be great.
Happy to. So I've been involved in the IT industry for over 3 decades now. I have a computer science degree, and over those 3 decades, I've been involved in programming, accounting software sales. I've been involved in IT sales to corporates, and since 2001, I've focused on providing IT support and services to SMBs.
So, what made you decide to go the hard route there, go to SMBs?
When I was selling and providing solutions to corporates, I was typically dealing with IT managers or other people within the organization who weren't at the top of the tree. And that sometimes meant that we missed out on sales or that we weren't always talking to the right decision maker. And it I always found that I got more satisfaction when I was dealing with the business owner, particularly the business owner, or often the financial controller, so the number two guy in the business. And I always found that far more satisfying to be dealing with those types of people within the organization.
Cool. And what about the transition from, programmer to hands-on techie, more on the hardware side? I mean, was that a conscious decision, or was something that was more interesting, or why did you decide to sort of move across to the other side, I suppose?
I've always been involved in IT, and it's something I want to continue to do for maybe another decade or two. So I'm quite happy over the course of my career to be involved in different parts of the industry, I guess just to keep energized. So it wasn't any strategic move to change from programming. I'd enjoyed my time in programming. I'd had the opportunity to work in a couple of different countries on banking systems, and it was all very rewarding. I guess along the way, I moved back to Australia at one point of time and was considering options, and ended up working for a smaller organization that was providing accounting solutions. So I guess at that point I took a direction that way. In 2001, I decided to change again and took myself off to Windows 2000 certification school and got my MCSA.
Okay, so here's a sort of an interesting question, I suppose, when it comes to those sort of qualifications. Now, you've got obviously a traditional university academic qualification, which is great. I think it's a great grounding for people. And then now, obviously, there's a big, always been a push to get the certifications. Now, that's undergone a lot of changes over the years, but it seems to me that there's now, again, a big push from the suppliers to have people using their products to be certified suitably. And people like Microsoft, for example, if you want to move up their partner chain, their ecosystem, you need also to have some qualifications, and so do your staff. I mean, how do you see the certification game, sitting in today's market? I mean, also given the fact that products like Office 365 are basically changing every month, it's a bit hard to become certified, or is there still value in it, do you think?
I think there's absolute value, and it's something that I've always pushed with the staff in our business, and which I'll continue to push going forward. I think that it's important for lots of different reasons. I think it's really important for individuals mapping out their own career development to continue to keep up to date with new developments in the industry.
And I mean, what do you see the main qualifications? Is it Again, is it important to do, maybe just the Microsoft server side, the cloud stuff, the general? I mean, for people out there who are typically MSP resellers, I mean, what would you be recommending that they should take in the certification path? What products or what options should they be considering for them and their staff?
Well, certainly historically, for those of us that are focused on the SMB space, certifications around small business server were really all but essential for staff climbing the ranks within our organization in the past. Of course, that's all changed, and we're assertively retraining and reskilling in the Office 365 area at the moment. So I think that for people looking at continuing to keep up to date with Microsoft certifications, the Office 365, the two exams there, I think are really important. And perhaps anything, I think there's still a case for anything around Active Directory and Hyper-V are still important to put in the mix as well.
And what's your feeling when it comes to, writing code? Is that something that people should also be considering? There certainly seems to be a move away from the hardware into the services, but also extending into the dev world, into developing apps, solutions, Access, Power BI, those sort of things, which sort of require a bit of a developer's mind, a bit of a programming logic. I mean, is that something as well as a skill that should be added on, or do you think that there's, if you're a server guy, a server person, you're a server person. If you're a, an Excel person, you're an Excel person. Is it that the way to go, or is it better to become a bit of a generalist, do you think?
Well, that's a really big question, and I'm not pretending to have all the answers, but I've certainly got quite a strong opinion in this area. And it all sort of comes back to what's next for career technicians who've been perhaps earning a reasonable income, perhaps even a pretty good income over the last decade or so, providing support around Windows Server, Microsoft Exchange, SQL Server. With the inevitable trend across to Azure, well, certainly I believe that Azure is going to dominate in time to come, and of course Office 365. I think that it's important to really seriously consider what more we can all be doing to keep ourselves in gainful employment in the industry. And yes, I definitely think that we need to be involved more in at the application level and or the software development level. And that's certainly something that I personally getting myself involved in at this point in time.
And again, is it something that obviously you've taken that step in your in your development, but would you be recommending that to other people managing an SMB business, an MSP business, a traditional on-premise hardware business? I mean, should they be looking at software and applications in some way, shape, or form, in your opinion?
Well, I think so. We've all got a number of clients that we've had as loyal clients for a number of years, and I think that there's a real opportunity there to extend the range of services that we offer to those clients outside the traditional IT support model that we've perhaps been focusing on in the past and been able to earn a good income from in the past.
Well, I think part of it too is there are two issues here that I certainly agree with you. Is the first one is that today's basic application, you just look at the Office applications, Excel is a good example, Access is another one. The power that those products have behind them in the VB scripting and all that sort of stuff, you can create whole applications just based on those two products. And I think that the second thing there is that a lot of these products now, that if you are able to develop some IP in them, you're able to get scale typically beyond what you could get with an MSP. So most MSP providers generally have clients within a certain region, you know, Sydney Basin, or, you know, they may have a few outside or whatever. Generally, they're within driving distance. But developing an app or selling it on the App Store or writing software gives you that leverage that allows you to sell that product or offer that service to a worldwide market. So I think they're the two major criteria I'd be pointing people to and say, look, there's a huge amount of advantage. If you know Excel or use a bit of Excel, if you could extend that knowledge and start looking at the automation, if you use Access, same sort of deal, there's a huge opportunity there. And again, I think we're overlooking in a lot of cases some of the simplest applications that have so much power that we could certainly add IP to and then resell, as you have pointed out.
Yeah, so you and I, Robert, we're both at the Microsoft Partner Conference on the Gold Coast last year, and I sat in on a presentation from Stephen Miller, who I think is the director of the Office division. Mm-hmm. And I took some interesting notes that I reviewed as part of my preparation for this session today, and he made some really strong comments along the lines of that reseller model is dead, and he was almost hinting at the fact that the MSP model's got a limited life. And he certainly made that exact point that you were just talking about going forward, we all need to find ways to add our own intellectual property to the range of services that we provide our clients. And to me, the obvious choice in that area is around applications or software development.
Yeah, and I think, again, the important thing is most people are probably fairly familiar with a lot of the very common tools that could commence this process. And I think you hear a lot of resistance from people who say, I'm not a coder, and, you know, I haven't got any genuine IP. But I think the reality is that's a bit of a cop-out. I think if they sit back and do a bit of analysis, they do have a vertical, or they maybe have a special interest that they could work with, that they could develop an app. And I think that a lot of it too is that the secret, I think, with software development is to do the rapid application model, is to get something out there, get feedback and adjust. I mean, that's very much been Microsoft's model. Their version one products generally aren't very good, but they get them to market, they get the market share, and they improve them from there. So I think the case is it's moving from a situation where you want to output this perfect piece of software to where you want a rapid release cycle, and the products that we have on our desktop today certainly allow that. And, you know, you can write, or you can use Excel, for example, to solve some very, very common problems for customers and then monetize that very easily. So I think that's a very good example.
Building on that, I think it's also important to point out that you don't necessarily have to start from scratch. There's certainly tools that are available that you could become expert in and use that tool to develop applications. So one example that we're doing with one of our clients is at the moment, who have already moved to Office 365, is they've got a legacy CRM solution that's based on an Access database. And we're using a product from a provider in the US called Sidekick, which is a Office 365 based CRM solution. And it's got a lot of capability to be adjusted and made specific to the organization. And we've got an opportunity there to fine-tune that solution for the client and really add some IP to the existing product. So we're not starting from scratch with that product. We're starting with an application and adjusting that to meet the client's precise requirements.
Yeah, and another one which I've been recently involved with and beginning to talk about more is Attached Apps. So Attached Apps is, again, typically a plugin for Office 365 that gives you the ability to share contacts. So one of the big challenges with many businesses is having a common set of contacts. Attached Apps provide you that for free, so you can bring that in your Office 365 and share those common contacts. And that's their freemium model, so that you can then upsell into their more CRM-based products. But again, they're very focused on the reseller. They look to their partners to provide the add-on services, the benefits, the extra value. So 100% agree with you that you don't need to, you know, sit down one day and say, right, I've got to develop an iOS app. How do I start? Where's the compiler? Off I go. I think that the most successful apps or the most successful solutions are simply an extension of, you know, what's out there. And I think that you know, so many people look at it and say, well, you know, I need to start and develop everything from scratch. But again, something like Facebook was a little bit better than MySpace. You know, they're all incremental and they do it a little bit better. So I think there's plenty of opportunities there. I think it just requires a bit of analysis. I mean, in your experience, when you've gone to the Sidekick option, was that a conscious decision? Did you come across it? I mean, how did you actually sort of make that, you know, decision to move in that sort of direction?
Well, the client came to us with a requirement. I researched the options that were available and sort of fell across Sidekick. So I just went to the office store, saw it in there, downloaded it into our partner site and played around with it. That particular organization has some fantastic videos on their website that really do a good job of teaching you about the product. I'm actually a strong supporter of that product. I certainly suggest that our peers all consider that product. I think it's got a lot of capability.
Cool. Well, I'll put that in the show notes for people to refer to, and also the attached app stuff as well, so people can have a look at it. So I think, again, what we're talking about here is that you know, our skills need to be honed, obviously, in the products that the customers are using and the way the industry's moving away from the on-premise, but that also opens up opportunities in things like Azure and development, and that allows you to move from being, I suppose, what is a managed service provider into something that's more like, you know, a general IT or business consultant. I mean, is that the sort of model that you're aiming for, is to move into that sort of area?
Absolutely, and it's amazing how easy it is to make that transition. If you look across, if everyone looks across the clients that they have, you'll probably find that there's a particular industry sector that you seem to do better at than another. And in our case, it happens to be wholesale and distribution companies in Western Sydney. And so about half of our clients are in that sort of industry space. And that means that over the years, we've accidentally built up a whole lot of IP about the way that those businesses operate. So when I find that I'm talking to the financial controller or the owner of the business about some of their business issues, I just find that I can naturally talk to them about how we can have a technology solution that can fulfill their pain points.
Well, I think that the key point there is the word solution. I think that too many MSPs, too many traditional resellers have been locked in this world of selling the technology. You know, this is the best device, this is the best operating system. I think the reality is the world's moved on to looking for a solution. They're not so fussed as to how or why that is delivered. They're basically looking to solve a business need. And I think that part of that and the growth of the web means that you have so many of these apps now that you can generally connect together or interface to products like Office 365 or the Google Universe and run on your mobile devices that solve the problem. We've never had that before, but there's still that core need for somebody, like you said, with the knowledge of the industry, with the knowledge of technology, to sit as an interface and basically assist the client making the best decision. And then typically they also need to go about implementing. Now that also gives them the advantage of being able to take that IP that they've learnt and then potentially reuse it again. So is the reason that you think that more ISPs, perhaps MSPs, aren't moving in this direction is because they're waiting for others, they're followers, they're not leaders? Or why do you think that there isn't this move? A lot of people, to me, seem to be stagnating and stuck in the old model. Is that just nature, I suppose? Or is it, you know, hesitancy because they don't understand software? What's that thing, do you think, that you've been able to make that leap? Is that your background, your programming expertise? Why do you think it's easier for you to be moving down this path?
Well, I think there's probably a few different things there, but certainly one thing is to work out how to charge for it. Many of us in the MSP space have spent the last 5 years or so transitioning across from break fix to some sort of gold and silver and bronze plan, which is all about providing IT support for a fixed fee per month. And then all of a sudden we find that the the market's moved on and we need to begin talking to our clients about other things, and all of a sudden these extra things that we now want to talk to about our client, we find that they're not really included in the gold plan. And so we need to go back and have a conversation with our client about, hey, we've got some really good things that we feel that we can do to help you in your business, but we need to find a different way to package our services to you so that we can continue to make money doing what we're doing.
Well, I think that the good comparison there is the Office 365 product. I think that, again, everybody, most MSPs look at it as a threat and it's easy to implement and it's sold as, you know, without IT support. But I think you and I would agree that very much like SBS, Small Business Server was sold very much in the same vein. You know, you don't need IT, you push a couple of wizards and everything works. And we know how many people built a whole model around that product. And I think so many people, again, you know, the base stuff of the Office 365 is easy to do. Get the emails up and running, maybe a little bit of file storage. But again, it's those add-on, it's those high-end things like the integration with AD, maybe working with PowerShell, you know, full development in SharePoint, link connectivity, Delve, all that sort of stuff now that seems to be, to me, being left on the table by so many MSPs. They're not wanting to make that expand their horizons beyond pure email. It seems to me that most of them are just doing a email migration from on-premise to Office 365 as they've always done with on-premise before. But you know what? That's probably the last email migration. So then where do they go from there? You know, are they not seeing this? Why aren't we seeing this uptake of these other fantastic tools and options? Is it because they don't see the benefit, they're not using it? I mean, how do you think we can move or get MSPs the opportunity to move from that level one, the basic email stuff, to really using the Office 365 service as a true platform to build a business on?
Well, I think I'm still working the answer to that question out myself, Robert, but I think that... Yeah, I don't know. I haven't got an immediate answer to that.
Okay, well, again, let's throw another one in there that hopefully that you might have an opinion on. You talk about Azure. So Azure, again, is another huge toolbox of things that can be done that was very difficult generally to do, and it's all under one umbrella. So we've got, you know, SQL as a service, web service as a service, virtual machines, machine learning, you know, AD integration, all that sort of stuff comes under this product. And, you know, where do you think that fits for the SMB generally? I mean, it's a big enterprise developer product, but I certainly see it moving more and more down into the SMB space and becoming an option. And I'm actually seeing more and more customers actually take it up and then looking for support in that respect. And unfortunately, again, I think a lot of traditional MSPs are not getting into it. I mean, what's your sort of, you know, views on the Azure side of things in relation to your MSP business?
Well, the number one thing comes down to the speed of your internet connection. And with across our client base, given that they're largely in Western Sydney, where that becomes an immediate issue. NBN is slowly coming to areas of Western Sydney, and as and when that gets put into place, that gives us some really good scope to talk to our client base about when it comes time to retire their servers to look at moving to Azure. So what we're typically doing with our clients is we don't have any more clients on SBS 2003. So we're certainly actively talking to our clients who are on SBS 2008 about going through a two-step transition process, retiring their Exchange 2008 box or that part that's on the file server and migrating it across to Office 365. And then in the next year, talking to them about transitioning some of their applications, depending on what they are, across to the Azure platform. And perhaps like something else really, Robert, building on top of that is maybe to a certain extent, skipping Azure completely as a platform for say your traditional SQL database application. I think that there's actually on the ERP front going to be more and more interest in applications that run in a browser. That don't necessarily need Active Directory in Azure to run their database.
Yeah, but on that side, is don't forget that Azure's obviously got SQL on our VM. It's also got SQL as a service. It's also got websites as a service. So I think the important thing to remember is that Azure, certainly like Office 365, is a lot of services. And again, you may not take advantage of the AD stuff, but there are tools that, for example, if you have an access database that you're looking to scale, maybe looking at an Azure SQL service that's load balanced, scalable, automatically backed up, all that sort of stuff, it's going to take away that hassle and that need to build that infrastructure yourself and may allow you to, again, roll out your app. And as you mentioned, a lot of things are going to the web. So if you could take on-premise access app and then convert it into a web app and run it on Azure with the web service and the SQL backend, that's going to allow you to scale it pretty quickly to a very large clientele base.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think that the important thing here is to highlight is just the sheer amount of opportunities that are out there. Now, obviously, there are too many, and that's, you know, the nature of the game, but it doesn't mean that there isn't something that people can focus on. So again, if you do, if you look at Azure, you can just focus on virtual machines. You could just focus on SQL if you did, maybe attached apps. I think the thing is that in this day and age, I think unfortunately a lot of traditional MSPs aren't able to cope with the information coming at them with the way that social media works, just the volume, and that's like most people. So I think the secret to it is being very focused on what you want to do, and my advice generally to people is the secret to success is actually doing less. You know, you need to say no to a lot of stuff, but you can't do that randomly. You're sitting there to sit down and make that decision and say, you know, this is where the profit's going to be, this is a business decision, this is the way we're going to do, and then be ready obviously to adjust, which is something that you're taking on board as well. I mean, is that a fair comment?
That's right. In fact, we're a good example once again of that. So as part of our strategic planning going back to early 2014, I was considering different areas of that we could take the business into, and we basically had a short list of three, which is basically around, the first is around Office 365 and apps built on top of that, mainly around the SharePoint space. The second one is around websites and e-commerce solutions and the vertical that we're best at, wholesale and distribution. And the third one was ERP solutions for that same vertical. And yeah, you know, we're not a big company by any stretch of the imagination. And I decided that we didn't have the resources and the financing to move in all three of them. And so we've decided to partner up with some new generation ERP solutions and partners that provide those solutions, rather than actively get involved in learning and supporting those ERP solutions ourselves.
So, I mean, in the resources you have on deck, are the people mainly technical, or do they have programming background like yourself? Is the programming side driven by yourself, or do you think there are other people within your business, other employees that you have that will adopt that and run with that and you know, grow into that area?
Some are interested in adopting it. I mean, I'm In conversations I have with my team, I certainly ask them, I guess, probing questions about where they see themselves being within the industry down the track, and probably still more than half of them see their future in infrastructure and IT infrastructure, and I like to remind them that might not always be there, and that they need to be considering other options within the industry. Certainly, there's some within the organisation that are really interested in applications and in software development. I guess I'm leading that process with some self-education I'm doing around an application called Adobe Business Catalyst, which I think is a great website platform. And that's what we're probably most advanced and progressing down that track with some pilot clients.
Okay, and like I said, I mean, moving forward, how do you see the business rolling out? I mean, you see that, you know, potentially that infrastructure is going to continue to decline and minimize, and you're going to be looking for more software application people, or is it more maybe business intelligence and consulting and add-on fees on around that sort of thing? I mean, again, if we're looking a bit further into the future, I mean, how do you see your business, you know, moving in the direction given, you know, the current state that it is at the moment?
I think that our business is transitioning from pretty much an equal spread of level one, level two, and level three engineers, which it's historically been, to more like the traditional pyramid, which is more level ones and level twos. And in an organization our size, we're really at the point now where we really only need one or two senior engineers, because we're not installing we're certainly not installing as many servers as we once did. Unfortunately, hardware's lasting a lot longer, and the operating systems are a lot more stable. So there's not the drive there to replace as often as what they used to need to be replaced.
One of the interesting things I read recently was the impact that the Uberfication of the world is having. So what it means is that basically Uber is obviously the ride sharing service that allows anybody effectively to be a taxi. It does have its issues, obviously, but the business model it's bringing is basically allowing a lot of very, very low level, entry level staff, consultants, whatever you want to call them, then to crowdsource this. So again, it seems to back up the model you're talking about, is you have a very limited number of high-level experts, and then the vast majority generally are like the Uber drivers. They're out there, they're doing the hard yards, they're probably making a decent living, but again, it's a lot more of people at that minimum wage or that lower level, which seems to be the trend across all the industries. So, I mean, is the message for those who want to succeed going forward that you need to have that, you know, you need to dedicate and have that high-level expertise? I mean, what's the, you know, in your opinion, what's the sort of secret to success to move out of just being an Uber driver to being, you know, an Uber owner sort of thing?
Well, it's certainly a concern that I do have about the industry. Throughout my time, I've always tried to nurture staff and take some great deal of satisfaction and staff that have worked for different organisations I've been involved with over the years and who have moved on to greater things than some of the larger organisations in Australia. So it's really quite satisfying for me personally to have been involved in some small part and their career development. And going forward, I see it more of an issue now than it's ever been, precisely what you're talking about there. I think it's going to be easy to be trapped into being sort of stuck at that level two help desk level, where you're doing really great work day in, day out, helping your clients with the issues of the day. Latest crypto locker outbreak, restoring some files from Shadow Protect that were accidentally deleted, installing a new Sonic Wall device, like all that sort of really good stuff that's really important for businesses to have. But how do we progress beyond that? How do we increase your salary other than, you know, annual CPI increases? How do we move people like that up the ladder going forward? I think that's an issue, and the only way to do that is to develop more business level skills that enable you to have business level conversations with various people within your client organizations. Not always the managing director, not always the financial controller. We've actually got one terrific consultant in our team who does our annual support visits, and at one stage we were giving that checklist visit to maybe not a junior but a mid-level person, and we accidentally worked out that it was far better to send a senior person in there who saw beyond the checklist, who'd walk around with his eyes open and talk to perhaps the warehouse manager about an issue that the he was having, and to bring that idea back, come up with a solution, go back to the organization, quote it, present it, close it, install it.
So we're seeing, do you think, you know, to an extent, the last generation of level one and level two techs? Are they just not coming into the fold? There's obviously there's no real incentive. There's no, again, there's the struggle for growth. There's a lot more potentially interesting things to do, like, you know, develop your own app, write your own software, be your own boss so much earlier than there ever was before. Are we seeing basically the death of the level one and level two techs, which means that from the other point of view, from the person running the MSP business, they're going to be starved of effectively, you know, good staff they need to support their business model?
Look, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say it's the death. The thing that I've noticed over, say, the last 5 years is that the quality has significantly improved. So going back in time, I think that there are a lot of jobs going in the IT support industry, and it was really quite easy to get a job in it. Even if you're capabilities weren't really up to scratch. Now, I think a lot of those type of people have somewhere along the line disappeared from the industry, and I've been greatly encouraged by the caliber of people that we've recruited over the last couple of years in particular, who have completed a TAFE course on networking, and a lot of the time these days they seem to already have customer relationship skills from part-time jobs they've had whilst they've been at TAFE, and they've worked really well. They've been very effective at coming on board and joining our organisation and giving good high levels of support. The question is, how do we develop them within our organisation further so that we can continue to increase their income and reward them?
And I think that's the big challenge in the smaller business side, because generally the up-and-comers, the people who really want to get on, let's say that they, you know, want to cut their teeth more and more in the Active Directory or the identity side, there is a limit, because most organizations either have a single server, or typically now we're moving to no server. And I think, again, you know, they do hit a ceiling that somebody who's keen to advance is going to look to move on. I think that's a big challenge for the MSP style business, especially when it gets into that routine. So I think that is one of the biggest challenges that you do highlight, is the fact is that you can bring these people on, train them up, but then where is their career progression? So again, you've got your own personal progression, and then how do you make sure that these people continue to progress? And it sort of maybe loops back a bit to our initial conversation about certifications. I mean, it's all well and good to say that you know this stuff, but you really need to demonstrate it. And as critical as, you know, some certifications are, and you know what people think of them, they are certainly probably one of the best ways to demonstrate that knowledge and prove that, and also, you know, get some sort of achievement and recognition that you've got to that level. So again, I think we seem to be looping back to the point, as you've reinforced, is how important you know, these certifications can be.
You mentioned the word challenge in there, and look, I have got a different point of view on that. It gets to the point with staff members that have worked with me over the years that I begin to have an open conversation with them about what their options are within the industry, and to openly talk with them about the fact that it might be time at some point in time for them to consider life outside our organisation. I think that we do a good job at looking after and nurturing our staff, and we've got some people that have been with us a number of years. In fact, I think I've now got three people on my books who've got long service leave accruals. But I think it's also important in my position to have some fresh people coming through with fresh ideas and a fresh look at things coming through as well. So I've got no problem with people in a very open way moving on from our organisation to greener pastures. As you say, perhaps to, you know, a corporate type or a larger, perhaps publicly listed IT services business who are typically in the CBD area, yeah, that's happened to us in the past and will happen to us in the future, and I actually see that as a good thing.
Well, I think that again the life or the role of the SMB reseller is fairly unique, and it's something that you know can be very challenging, and for those that do enjoy it and yourself included, obviously get a big buzz out of it, and the challenge and the uniqueness and the difference it gives you day in and day out. But again, there is a fact that as time progresses, the technology changes, the industry changes, and again, like you say, it may not suit each individual and it may not suit each individual business. But I think the important thing that you're bringing across here in all respects is the ability or the need to review, change, adapt, because that's what really technology is about. And it seems to me we're undergoing, you know, one of those major inflection points now. And it is interesting to me that a great deal of technology people are actually failing to make this transition. They're failing to adopt these tools. They're becoming very negative, very resistant to all this change. And you know what? The change, momentum just rolls on. And eventually, if they don't get on board, I think, again, they're going to suffer quite significantly.
That's very true. And I think that going back in time, we had the opportunity, say every 3 or 4 years, that something major would occur that we'd need to take on board and train up on and get across. And that, of course, was the different iterations of SBS as they came out. It's all different now, Robert. The amount of new functionality that is continually coming out on Office 365 is quite scary. It's very hard to keep up, as I'm sure you can personally attest.
Well, I think the two challenges are is again, the like you said, the product's changing so rapidly, so, you know, monthly, daily, whatever. But I think the other thing is that a lot of people overlook is that in the good old SBS days, we used to go to a user group, we used to sit down in theatre style, there was an expert up the front who told us everything we needed to know about the month, and then we went off. There was nothing else. There was no Twitter, there was no social networking, there were no blogging sites generally. It was pretty rare to get information except from that one source. Now today, contrast that with, you know, you've talked about Sidekick, we've got attached apps, we've got those plugins, we've got, you know, the Office 365, we've got Azure, we've got social media, we've got Twitter, we've got blogs, we've got so much information about a product which is changing so rapidly. I think that's where the dual challenge lies, is maybe not so much the product, is people are coming and saying, well, where do I go for, you know, this single source of information, the single point of truth that I can rely on? And I think the simple answer is you can't. You really have to refine your sources, keep working on them, throw out what doesn't work, keep your ear to the ground, but it's all about, you know, scanning the environment rather than just, you know, maybe just watching what the Speedo says. You've really got to be aware of so many different avenues of information now. And part of it is that now it's a matter of you have to, like I said, monitor all these and somehow work these in and work out what's best. So I think they're the two dual challenges we're facing. Now, that equates to, in essence, a world that has changed from being linear to being exponential. And I think that's where a lot of people are failing to make that transition and appreciate that, you know, if you didn't make a change and the world is linear, you could, you know, 3 steps, 4 steps, you can catch up. But if the world's now exponential, you know, those 3 or 4 changes are now placing you, you know, the curve's now almost gone vertical. I think that's the big difference, which so many people just aren't understanding and appreciating.
And that's the responsibility of the business owner, the MSP business owner, to absolutely recognize that and be the eyes and ears for the organization. Because if I look out my door now, my team are working on the day-to-day stuff, and they've got even less time at the end of the day than me to think about the future. After all, it's not their business; it's my business. So it is my responsibility to be looking ahead and to find effective ways to bring the team along with me as we transition across to that exponential change.
And I think part of it too is that the information was coming in such a, like I said, a 3-year waves, and it was ramping up and it was easy to digest. I think now, you know, it's a case of if you don't want to invest the time and effort in those monitoring all these sources, you need to have someone on board, pay someone on board or whatever, who's going to be able to come in and give you a summary, a pricey, an update. You know, these are the major points you need to watch out for. This is what's happening, and you can come and ask questions. What about this? What about that? And you get the answers. I mean, I think that is the critical thing now, is you have to go to those key people in the verticals you're looking at and really, you know, make sure that you're close to them and able to get the information that you need, because again, it's going to be from multiple people and you just haven't got the time to synthesize through it every day. And again, find those people who are doing it in that area and then support them in their endeavors is what I would say.
Along with having a champion within the organization to drive some of these changes and experiment and spend time. And it's important for the business owner to allocate time each and every week for a couple of staff, you know, senior staff, trusted staff, to spend non-billable time, non-billable hours, investing in learning about new functionality, for example, in Office 365. So for instance, we had one staff member yesterday who spent 3 or 4 hours looking at a new application that sits on top of Office 365 SharePoint, and seeing how we could use that perhaps internally for our own purposes with regard to keeping track of documents from our clients, and also, of course, with an eye to how we might be able to perhaps find a way to package that up and provide that in a cost-effective fashion to our existing client base.
Well, again, we talk about one of the big points of a place like Google is 20%, you know, free time to develop, and a lot of the projects that come out of that, like Gmail, Maps, and those sort of things, became commercial products. So it seems counterintuitive that you need to give people more free time to fiddle, I suppose, is the first thing. And the second thing I would say is that there are companies that do that, but where most companies fail, I think, is that the information that they learn and they accumulate, they don't actually keep, as in they don't document, they don't write, they don't blog, they don't share, they don't, you know, have a mechanism that says, okay, if you're going to spend 20% of your time looking at this product from SharePoint, our expectation is that you will write up a summary, you will do a blog post, you will do some information that will provide value, you know, to others inside the organization and give us a reference point to go forward. And I think that's such a critical thing is the collection of this IP, which so many people have and they're accumulating, but they don't write it down, they don't keep it, they haven't got this discipline of storing it in OneNote, writing a blog, putting it in SharePoint, writing a simple document, whatever it is that's where they're failing. And I think that's where a lot of the IP that they have is just floating out the door, and they're losing opportunities because, again, they're allowing this information to basically escape outside the organization.
Well, there's a gem that you've given me, Robert, because that's all very obvious, but something I haven't been doing. So,
And I would certainly recommend, and my big credo certainly is to any organization, it's about capturing that information. There are so many ways to do it. Blogs are a fantastic way to do it, and people should be encouraged. The benefit it gives you is that the staff who write them, it's not only going to help them get their thoughts in order, it's going to help them be able to express themselves and communicate better. It's going to improve their writing skills. There are so many benefits that are provided doing that. And I think the main point about it is the discipline. You know, one of the things that was drummed into me when I went through my university course is you write everything down. It doesn't matter if you can't read it or whatever. You get it down, you put it down somewhere on paper. Now, for me, that was always a paper notebook, but now that's become something like OneNote. So my strongest advice is at the very minimum to have OneNote open every day, and you dump everything and anything in there and you can sort it out later. But obviously, you know, formal blogs, formal processes is such an important thing that it adds value to the business, so that if you do need to sell it or when someone else comes on board, you've already got that information on board and we have the tools to do it.
Well said.
All right, so with that, I think we're certainly reaching our time limit. I want to be respectful of Daryl's time. So if you want to firstly give us a bit of a summation of what you think, where the industry's going, your recommendations based on our conversation today, and then let people know how they can get in contact with you, look at what you're doing, keep up to date what's happening in your business.
Sure. So another expression that I wrote down from the event that I attended from Stephen Miller was a phrase, disruption is a fact of life for everyone. And I think that's certainly a takeaway message that I think that we all need to consider. We're going to have to all continue to change and change quickly. Robert, you've been talking about that now for, I don't know, maybe a couple of years, and somewhere along the line I bought into that argument, and certainly what we're doing within our business. If you'd like to look further at what we're involved in, you can contact me via email on darylm@netcare.sydney. So yes, we've got a GTLD .sydney. We're in the process of doing a little bit of rebranding and a new website coming, which will be developed on the Business Catalyst platform by myself. And my Twitter is Daryl McKay, DarylMca.
Excellent. So Daryl is on the Twitter, he's on the social network, he's also rebranding and revamping. So I think you've given us a great amount of information and experience there, and some good insights into how you're morphing your business and how you're working with technology and the opportunities that are there. So again, I would see it as very much as a glass, half full. There's so much opportunity there that we can now start work towards, that again, it's not difficult. We just need to get started. And there are a few key learnings that are great from our conversation today. So I really appreciate that, Daryl, and I'm sure all the listeners will be too. I'll put all the notes up in the blog post when this episode goes live. But if you want to follow what I'm doing, the best idea is to go to my blog at CIAOps.com. Or the website. The blog is blog.ciaops.com, and you can follow me also on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. And with that, I'll bring to a close another episode of the Need to Know podcast. Thank you very much for listening. You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For guides on using technologies like SharePoint Online and Office 365, visit www.ciaops.com/publications. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.